Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have with me today advisory expert John Thompson. Hello to you.
Hi there, Rob. How are you?
We're fantastic today. John, lovely to have you on the show. Tell us about your background and how you got into this game.
Well, I'm a bit of an oddball, actually, Rob. Initially out of university, I was in leisure management in a large corporation called First Leisure for 5 years, and then rightly or wrongly thought I wanted to get more into high-level management and thought that training to be a chartered accountant was the best way to do that.
Right.
So I retrained as a chartered accountant, was fortunate enough to work with a firm called Harris Walters, which was very cutting edge at the time, very client focused. We would now call it advisory led, but the language didn't exist in those days.
Mm.
I then sort of went off into industry for a bit and was FD of an M&E contract for 5 years. Great training in what ethics are and ethics aren't in the construction industry. Came back in at the profession as a 100% new business manager, and working with Richard Walters in Winchester, we tripled the size of the practice in 2 years. And then we got swallowed up by what was then Baker Tilly. And I ended up as a national partner with Baker Tilly, responsible for training and mentoring 80 to 100 different partners and managers, very much about advisory led, very much about what does the client want and helping clients develop in their businesses.
Mm.
Came out of Baker Tilly with some colleagues, set up F3C, service now the profession, both large and small. There's 5 top 100 firms right down to a whole range of sole practitioners in training and helping them and providing them with different tools to help them deliver advisory services to their clients.
Great. What kind of shape do you feel the accounting profession is in right now, John?
I think there's a lot of good stuff going on. Some really good firms out there doing some really interesting things. There's one or two slightly negative trends. I get a little bit fed up on LinkedIn and other social media, seeing accountants who maybe we've all never heard of stand up and tell everyone how all of their accountants are bad and they're different and better and etc. etc. And I think, how can you make that judgment? Because in the same way that it stop telling your clients what they need until you fully understand them and then tell them what they want, because then you understand their backstory.
Mm.
How can you criticize accountants who you've never met, who you don't know?
Yeah. How well served do you feel the accounting profession are by the ecosystem around them, the software vendors, the coaches, consultants, mentors?
Well, the vendors, I think, have done a fantastic job in helping practices get more focused on their processes.
Mm.
And there's no doubt most practices are much more efficient than they used to be. Maybe one or two vendors have gone a step too far in suggesting that they are the silver bullet to every problem mankind has. And maybe some have even gone so far where in the old days we used to talk about don't let the taxpayer wag the dog. Work out what it is you're trying to do and then find a piece of software that helps you do it, not the other way around.
Mm. How can compliance drive advisory? Because a lot of people think it's one or the other and one's dying and one's growing. Where do you sit on that, John?
Well, and compliance is definitely not dying. I mean, people who say that are just being silly, really. I mean, it's changing and it always has been changing. It'll continue to change. And there's no doubt things like AI and machine learning are going to, you know, automate certain processes. But at the end of the day, clients need looking after. Clients want to be looked after. And compliance is part of looking after them. Traditional model is to leverage advisory out of compliance. There are some firms out there now who have flipped that model. They are leveraging compliance out of advisory. They are leading with advisory, a very much advisory-led service, and recognize that it's something clients have to do, but it's not something clients really want. So therefore, give them what they want and then flip the model and sell them what they need afterwards.
Yeah. Compliance is certainly not what clients value, is it?
No. One is they don't fully understand it. Two, it's a bit of a hassle to them. Why do they need to understand it? They just want you to take the hassle away from them.
Mm.
But anything that helps a client protect what they've got and then do a bit better, and in some cases do a lot better, that's what clients value.
But what do you say to firms that say, look, we've got a really good business going with compliance, our recurring funds are excellent, we don't need to offer any advisory, our clients seem quite happy?
I think every practice is different. Partners of a practice are happy doing what they're doing. Who are we to tell them they should change?
Mm.
We maybe should be saying, think a bit further ahead. And most practices I've come across very rarely plan more than 12, 24 months ahead. In many respects, are a little bit like some of their clients last year plus a bit, which is not really planning at all. And we would encourage them to think about not just the numbers, but what we would call the story behind the numbers and the reasons why they're doing things.
Why should a firm be more advisory led?
Number one, in every other sector that exists outside our profession, there is a little mantra that everybody uses, you know, listen to your customers. They'll tell you everything you need to know. Give them what they want. Give them what's important to them. So why wouldn't your clients want to do better than they're doing now? And it is very difficult to give them what they want if we don't fully understand what's going on inside their head. Number two is the benefits are enormous. We often say to firms, look, on average, you will or you should expect to generate from about 10 to 20% of your compliance clients. You should be able to leverage for every pound of compliance spend, £2 or £3 of advisory spend. But we have some practices, and there's one in particular I can think of, and I won't name them, but if anyone wants to ask me afterwards, I'll tell them private. Well, there's a 28-year-old manager who, when he signs up new clients, is regularly getting £6 to £8 of advisory to £1 compliance.
Wow.
But in addition to that, huge financial benefit. The relationship benefit is enormous because you're having regular contact, you're understanding what's going on with a client, you're becoming indispensable almost to their future because you're the people who are holding their hands, helping them plan, helping them implement those plans.
Yeah. Presumably as well, there's a good loyalty benefit because when you're in deep with clients really adding value, it's not easy for them to go somewhere else.
Well, there's a little phrase we used to use many years ago at Harris Walters that once a client's taken their clothes off in front of you, they're never going to leave you. and Rob, when you know them inside out and they've shared stuff with you and you've shared stuff back, why would anyone want to break that?
Yeah. So the benefits are huge. There's a massive upside to being more advisory focused. Why don't firms do it, John? What's the barriers or obstacle?
I think with some partners and some firms, there's a degree of fear. They're constantly being told they've got to be experts in everything. And one of our messages is, you don't have to be an expert. I would say to a firm, think about how you operate tax within your practice. You're not all experts, but actually, most people in the practice are doing little bits of tax advice at a low level all the time. And then some people are doing a bit more and some people are doing a bit more. And then when it gets particularly tricky, maybe R&D, capital allowances or VAT, you bring in an expert. Advisory is just the same. We should all be doing, let's call it the low level stuff. And then some of us will be doing a bit more and some a bit more. And there might be one or two specialists. Or if we haven't got them, we'll bring people in.
Yeah. Are there any other barriers? For instance, some accountants tell me it's okay offering advisory, having it in your tool bag, but I'm not very good at actually selling it and positioning it and pricing it.
Well, one of the key points is advisory is an internal term. You don't walk up to a client and say, we do advisory. I mean, what the hell does that mean to a client?
Good point.
It's about actually, that's the advisory word is our internal language. What advisory really is about understanding clients, helping them put their plans together, helping them implement plans, and then everything else hangs off that.
Yeah.
So it's really a gateway approach. It starts with the sort of what some people call a planning service, but I don't really like that term because I think it's much more than that.
And when you see advisory done well in firms, does it come top down and it's part of the culture? Because we often see little pockets or champions of advisory, but it's not done that well across the board.
The absolute key, whether in a large practice or a small practice, is to think about the process. Think about your standard operating processes or SOP. Mm. And every practice has SOP for audit, accounts, tax. When it comes to advisory, it tends to be very ad hoc, not very well monitored or structured, or there's not sufficient training in it. But actually, once you get your SOP sorted out, your standard operating processes that fit what you're trying to do with your practice, because they'll vary across practices, that's when it starts to become part of what we do, part of what we do every day, every week, and then it slowly becomes part of the culture of the organization. But there is no silver bullet to this. This is about persevering, being resilient, getting your SOPs organized, putting your processes in place.
They're not going to be great overnight, are they?
No, but I mean, you know, occasionally there's one or two, particularly sole practitioners, who maybe been doing this kind of work previously, but want to get more organized. And because of a sole practitioner, if they get their capacity issue sorted, maybe through outsourcing or training one or two people in the practice to do a bit more, then they can accelerate their advisory very fast indeed. But typically with a larger practice or a very large practice, it is stepping stone stuff.
Mm. So what are some of the mistakes firms make when trying to do advisory?
Number one, they try and sell advisory to clients because it isn't but to a client is not advisory. It's kind of, well, what on earth is it? Is advisory a box, a trick? What is it?
It's intangible, isn't it?
That's right. But it, to the client, it's not intangible, because essentially it's taking the time to understand what the clients want, rather than us as professionals assessing what we think they need and then helping them plan to achieve that. And then all our other services just falling behind it.
So you're talking about being outcome-based there, John, aren't you, rather than selling the service?
It is, but it goes a bit further than that, because I often hear other sort of commentators on stage say, what we do is you understand our goals and aspirations, and then you do ABC. And I sort of wince at this, because actually that throwaway remark of understand their goals and aspirations is the most important bit. And you should spend quality time doing that, because you get that right and the rest is easy.
Are there any other mistakes that accountants make when becoming more advisory-led?
Sometimes they look around the practice and they view it as a project that should be undertaken, and they then think about actually who's got a bit of spare time in order to focus on this, rather than look at the other way around and said who's going to be best.
What about pricing advisory, John? We said the word intangible. It's a moving feast, isn't it, in a way? And it must be difficult for accountants to get a handle on what to charge for it.
Well, I mean, accountants are used to charging stuff.
Right.
Dear old Trent asked me to write a little piece for Practice Ignition on pricing for advisory. And it is the basic pricing model. It is saying, if I'm going to roughly spend a certain amount of time with a client and deliver a certain amount of value, then I want a certain amount of return on my time and the investment and the value I can achieve. That's no different to pricing for anything else. Why it should be, I don't understand.
Well, you mentioned two things there. One's a time-based pricing approach and the other is a value-based approach.
Well, if you take, for instance, one of the examples I gave was, if you take our corporate finance arm, they do a mixture. Often they do a mixture. And why can't advisory be a mixture? But as an absolute basic starting point is, if your basic standard advisory process will be to meet clients on a quarterly basis and maybe do an annual strategic planning review with them on you know how many hours that's going to be. You know what you normally charge, and I would encourage you to premium price on. However, if you are working with a client where you know or believe, and the client believes, that by working together they're going to double, triple the value of their business, why wouldn't you have an extra arrangement on top?
You mean like some performance-based remuneration?
Absolutely, just like the corporate finance guys get. For me to sell your business, Rob, I will charge you X. If I achieve this price, it'll be X plus one. If I achieve that price, it'll be X plus three.
How much is mindset a factor here, John? Accountants are conservative by nature. You often hear objections like, well, my clients won't pay for that. They don't need that. What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, an interesting conversation with an unnamed top 50 firm where one of the senior partners there said, if my clients wanted this, they'd ask for it.
Yes.
So I then, having done my research before the meeting, said, well, how many services does your firm offer? And he hadn't got a clue. So actually I said, well, on your website, you've got 23. If you don't know how many of you got, how the hell do you expect your clients to know you've got? So how are they going to ask for something you don't even know you do?
Sure.
So on the other side of the coin on that, Rob, you've got situations where there's a fear about selling this to clients. But I would say to every accountant, you're already doing advisory. You may not realize it, but you are, but you're just not organized or structured. And the opportunity is to be much more organized or structured. So for instance, I would say recently I was at an institute event and I said, okay, so put your hands up, who does advisory? There's about 60 people. About half put their hands up. So I said, okay, so those who didn't put your hands up, swap round and put your hands up. So if I came along to you and said to you, I want to set up a new business, you'd start asking me a few questions, wouldn't you? And one of the things you ask about is, should I LLP? Should I be a sole practitioner? Should I be a limited company? What should I be? And you're going to ask me about the seasonality of my business and therefore where the year end might be and all this. So this is low level advisory. You're already doing it, but you're probably just giving it away because you don't value it. The client does value it. And it's about building on that, but recognizing you're already doing it. You just need to be a bit more organized, but decide what your comfort levels are. Back to my little sort of tax analogy, you know, you'll move up and do more and more and more to the point where you think, right, I'm comfortable here, I don't want to do any more.
Yeah. Where does confidence come from, John, in advisory?
I think confidence comes from, obviously, success. I think, you know, the simple learning patterns of, why wouldn't you practice practice on yourself? Why wouldn't you practice within the office? Why wouldn't you practice on a friendly client? Why wouldn't you practice on a friendly introducer and then go out to your live clients and then go out to your live prospect? It's a common sense approach.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that accountants feel they have to be experts, but they sometimes just have to be a little bit further ahead than their clients.
You do, but don't forget that most accountants have worked with hundreds and hundreds of businesses over the years, and most of their clients have been involved in, what, one or two businesses?
Mm.
So the experience that accountants got is usually huge and wide, whereas maybe the experience clients got is narrow and deep. But huge and wide has a very powerful role in giving a different perspective of narrow and deep.
Are you a fan of niching, John?
I think niching for the right people is a good choice. For the wrong people, it's a bad choice. I think it's actually quite difficult to niche, but done well, it can make you an awful lot of money.
Why is it difficult to niche for an accountant?
Because generally speaking, most of them have started in a general practice and they've got a huge range of experiences, and for them to sort of narrow down into one little niche. Having said that, there's different niches. I mean, one of the things I'd encourage, from some very successful advisory-led practice where they've niched into a particular mindset of clients, and not necessarily in a sector, but they've said, what we really want is we want truly entrepreneurial, ambitious business owners who want to go places. So that's a little niche in itself rather than a sector niche or an industry niche.
Yeah, there are many ways to niche, of course, aren't there? You mentioned earlier low-level advisory. How high up does advisory go?
Well, I mean, there are some accountants who, although they might not call themselves this, are very skilled, highly experienced business coaches.
Right.
There are others who do not want to achieve that level and don't need to achieve that level. But at the absolute bottom level, it's about understanding your clients and giving them what they want. I had a conversation with a practice just yesterday, and they've got 800 tax returns. And of those 800 tax returns, they reckon 3/4 of them are relatively straightforward. So we're left with 200 sort of slightly complex ones for whatever reason.
Hmm.
And the discussion ones were, okay, guys, let's look at the 200. How many of those 200 cases do you know have got wills? They haven't got it. They don't know. We don't know. Okay, how many of those 200 are we slightly concerned that, one, if they haven't got a will, it could cause the business problem? But two, from a slightly selfish point of view, we don't know the terms and conditions of those wills. Well, if they all die, we could lose 200 clients.
Yeah.
And then you can move on and you can just dig a little bit deeper and dig a little bit deeper. So understanding our client base is the starting point anyway.
Yeah. What skills do accountants need to be good advisors? You mentioned coaching there. They clearly need some good commercial acumen, don't they? What else?
I would honestly say, Rob, that the training that most accountants go through and the general experiences they receive in practice, actually, the number one trait rather than skill they need is they must like talking to people, being with people, and it really helps to be a bit nosy.
Curious.
Curious, a great word, curious.
Mm. Is that inborn in people, or can you develop that?
You can definitely develop it. I'm a great believer that actually anybody can learn to do anything if they really want. And I think that's exactly the same in people who are not curious can certainly learn to be curious. People who maybe start off with being a little bit uncomfortable with sitting down by themselves with clients without them having prepared necessarily the agenda, you can learn to go through that. I mean, there's lots of businesses work with where I encourage them to have a sort of buddy system where you're the experienced guy, Rob, and I'll come along and I'll buddy along with you and I'll sort of see what Rob does and how he does it, and hopefully at the end of it think, oh, actually I could do that.
Yeah. How is the accounting profession at the moment in the advisory space, John?
I think it's getting confused. There's a lot of stuff and nonsense out there. There's too much focus on data. We believe as professionals that our clients need better data, but I would turn that around a bit and say, yeah, but why don't we ask them what they want?
Mm.
Because I'm not sure many clients will knock on your door and say, I think I need more data or I need better data. Most of these guys in business are, the ladies in business are incredibly busy people, and they generally run their business maybe on cash availability, sales out the door and order input. And if they're reasonably successful, is that sufficient or do they need more? Are they better off spending their time actually out there winning business and doing business, as long as those three little KPIs are fine, then actually digging down into more data and more data and more data.
Mm. Now, you're one of the leading advisory experts in the world for accountants, John. What's the quality of advice being given to accountants to make advisory a success? Is it good? Is it conflicting? Is it confusing?
I think there is still confusion out there. One of my favorite quotes is attributed to Leonardo da Vinci. Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And we as a profession are often guilty of complicating things. And actually, I think part of the role of people like me is to try and simplify matters, not just for clients, but also for practices and partners, and say, look, let's not overcomplicate. Let's start with the basic premise that we all want to help our clients do better, and we need to understand them in order to be able to help them. And it would be extremely helpful to both us and them. They had a sensible plan that we'd help them put together to begin to move that forward. And then how much of that implementation we want to get involved with will depend on how comfortable we feel working in different areas at different levels, but we can bring in other people. The future of the accountant, I believe, is very much that kind of concierge.
Yeah.
You know, we will be aware of things. And you see that in terms of sort of app advisory and things like that. You know, I mean, Xero have got 700 app links connected to them. I mean, for crying out loud, who on earth knows all of them? But you don't need to. You just need to be able to identify the opportunity or the possibility and speak to someone who has got more knowledge than you've got.
Yeah.
That's, like a concierge.
Yeah, that signposting. And you bring up an excellent point. There are different kinds of advisory, aren't there?
There are, but I think things like app advisory and other sorts of advisory like that, I think they are secondary sales. I think they come after the basic understand your client, help them plan properly, help them implement the plan. And then these other things just reveal themselves as being necessary or important, or indeed not as important.
Mm. What role does the technology, the software play, John, with something like F3C? What does that offer clients in the advisory role?
Well, F3C offers CAS, which is the Complete Advisory Solution, and it's an advisory delivery platform. And yes, it's based around a technology offering. But at the same time, the technology offering is, like all really good technology offerings, it's just an efficient way and an effective way of delivering something that if you didn't have the tech, you could still do it. So if you think of things like some of the reporting softwares that are available out there, you can still, if that was to collapse, you could still do it. It would just take you longer.
Mm.
And it wouldn't be quite as fast or effective or efficient, but you could still do it. So the tech is an enabler, a huge help, a massive support, but it's not essential. The ideas are what is essential. The process outside of the tech is more important, but the tech just makes it so much faster and better.
Yeah, but F3C gives accountants the structure, the framework, the conversational prompters, if you like. Would that be fair?
Absolutely. We're back to SOPs again, standard operating processes, and
yeah.
F3C through CAS. CAS will provide different mechanisms to provide different SOPs in order to achieve different things. So, for instance, if we're working with a new practice where their priority is to grow very quickly, obviously we would be saying apply CAS to win lots of new clients, develop new business. More mature practice would be a bit more of an emphasis on farming their existing client base. With a larger practice, very much a big drive towards developing their people. So it's not just about pushing the clients forward, supporting clients, but also about developing their people.
Yeah, this is terrific, John. If you had a magic wand, is there anything you'd change about the accounting profession?
Wow. I question the value of some of the institutes and associations who you would imagine, if you're an outsider looking in, would be leading some of the things we've been talking about. But actually, are they really? I even had a conversation with a very senior guy in a very large practice a couple of weeks ago, shook his head and said, my God, it sometimes wonders whether we should start our own institute.
That's frightening.
And I sympathize.
Yeah. John, if people want to get in touch with you to find out more about CAS and the great stuff that you do, what's a good way to reach you?
Fastest way is go on the F3CAdvantage.co.uk website, watch the video, book a demo, or if you want to speak directly to me, then contact me at johnt@f3c.co.uk.
And tell us real quick what F3C means.
Oh, F3C, real quick. Okay, F, facilitation. The three C's of C1, C2, C3 are coaching, coaching, consulting, compliance. So our model is facilitation, coaching, consulting, compliance. Every practice is doing the compliance work and should most will carry on doing so. Great. Doing some consulting work might be MIS, might be tax, might be something else. Go to the top of the model. Get into the facilitation. Understand the client. Facilitate them through so they understand what is important to them. You understand what's important to them. Help them put their plan together. Coaching about helping them implement the plan. And their consulting work, the project work, will just drop out.
Yeah. John, this has been terrific. Would you leave us with an encouraging message to the accountants listening that are doing well on compliance, but want to start to dip the toes into the world of advisory and want to confidently deliver it and sell it?
Look for support. If you don't want to talk to us, talk to somebody else. I mean, we've got a sister organization called businessadvisorypartner.com. Look at their website. Lots of free stuff on there about just educating people, just dipping your toe in the water, finding out a bit more. You're already doing it, guys. You just need to maybe structure yourself and get organized and get serious about it. And you'll do it even better and you'll have loads of fun doing it and your clients will love you doing it.
Well, that's been world class, John Thompson. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Rob.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.